Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here on KLBB, Club 1220. Tom Hsu in the control booth.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm great. You know, it's been a while, it feels like.
One week.
That's a while. That's
you know, when you're away from me, I understand how that could feel like forever.
I feel empty inside.
You're not alone.
But it is beginning to look a lot like Christmas. You're back. We're all here. We're all happy. And you know how I can tell it's Christmas besides lingering flurries?
Highs of negative 3.
Well, there's that. But Peter is coming home. Do you know who Peter is?
Peter. No.
Okay. Peter is a young man who apparently surprises his parents every year on Christmas. And the one thing that his parents want most of all is Folgers coffee. And this commercial
sure.
I don't feel that I can actually have a tree up in the house until I've seen this commercial. I want to play some audio. We're just going to jump right into it. Here we go.
What? Merry Christmas.
Peter!
Merry Christmas.
Everyone, please.
I know how to wake him up. Come on, Peter.
For this and all your mornings from Folgers.
Do you recall Folgers coffee? That was a coffee people drank before Starbucks.
You know, listening to that, I realize that I am not in flavor country right now.
No.
I need to go and have some of this. Actually, that commercial made my mother weep like a baby when she was pregnant.
And the brilliant thing is, it's on every year. You never have to make a new commercial. You just use the same video every year. I think that...
And the voice guy is going to get paid every single year.
Is that how it works?
Oh, yeah.
There's other Christmas commercials that weren't as successful, weren't as long-running. Do you remember a device called the Atari 2600?
I only had one.
Well, to our audience here who might not know what that is, Atari had a video game system that was, yeah, it was good.
It
but,
was great.
Yes, it was great. And, in fact, they produced so many games that they couldn't sell them all. In fact, many of them ended up in landfills.
Especially E.T.,
matter of fact, speaking of E.T., I have the Atari E.T. at Christmas because nothing says Christmas more than an extraterrestrial from a different planet. This commercial aired in 1982, 31 years ago. This is, and the description here from the author at fuzzymemories.tv. It's actually a website similar to what I do here at tcmedianow.com. A last-ditch effort to sell E.T. cartridges before they went to the landfill. So let's hear some audio from the E.T. at home Christmas. He's walking into the house now in a Santa suit.
This just sounds magical.
Only from Atari. Made especially for systems from Atari. The video game that lets you help E.T. get home. Just in time for Christmas. Happy holidays from Atari.
Apparently E.T. going home is not as special as Peter because it just didn't sell.
Not so well. Not so well.
I got one more. And this one. You know, at Christmas time, every company can get in the Christmas spirit, whether you are selling cartridges, coffee, or fish and chips at a fast food restaurant. And back in the 70s, we used to have these Arthur Treacher's fish and chips. They had these big, you know, KFC's had the big kind of chicken coop style restaurant.
Sure, sure.
Well, Arthur's had these little boxy rooftop things. In fact, if you go in St. Paul on Highway 61, there's still one of them that's left. I think they do auto loans now, but the buildings are still there. And this is a commercial with Santa Claus trying to push some fish.
This is CBS.
Hee, 'twas right around Christmas, and as you can see, Arthur Treacher's giving gift certificates free. Don't pay for gift certificates. Get them free with a family pack. Coupons can save lots of money for you. On fish, on chicken, on shrimp and clams, too. Certificates and coupons worth more than $5 free when you buy an Arthur Treacher family pack.
Daddy, after work, don't forget to bring home our family pack.
Free gift certificates.
There we go. Are you sold?
I am. You know, his enthusiasm really encourages me to go and get these gift certificates.
And as I say, if you really enjoy that commercial, tcmedianow.com, you can watch the entire Arthur Treacher commercial, and I might even have one or two more.
Oh, beautiful.
We got a great show today. We have Alan Stone. He was at KQRS for a couple of different stints over the course of many years, and he's going to have some stories and tales of the dark and light days of radio.
I am. Oh, by the way, I also wept ceaselessly after watching the Arthur Treacher.
He's weeping right here with me. In fact, I have some Kleenex here for.
You actually have great facial expressions through the glass here. I'm impressed.
It's mostly horror of the things that I've saved. And you missed, Tom, last week. We had the Star Wars Holiday Special audio last week.
No.
And, yeah, you missed it this year.
Oh.
I wrote a contract saying I can't play any audio of it again for the year, because I want to keep the show and actually keep a listener here and there. Let's take a commercial break. We'll come back, and I'm looking forward to having a lengthy and entertaining conversation with our pal Alan here. And we'll be back here on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osman, and our guest today, making his second appearance on Flashback Twin Cities, is Alan Stone. Welcome.
Thank you, Tom. What's your theme music?
It's a song that probably never played on KQRS. It's KG. That's off the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've heard it one time on a news broadcast of the videos that
he
plays.
Yes.
One time.
And I thought, well, if it's good enough for the Channel 9 News, it's good enough for this show.
Oh, it's a great period piece.
Oh, right, a very good period piece. And it's one, you probably didn't spin that album on your station very often, did you?
Probably not, no.
Probably not, no. You probably would have been drug out and beaten if you would have played that on a rock station. Because you had your disco is not good bumper sticker on the back of your car.
That's right. Well, that was a disco thing.
That's right.
That was fun.
We were talking before the show, and for some background, Alan was the program director and midday announcer at KQRS for 12 years the first time.
The first time,
yeah, and then
something like that. I wasn't program director the whole time there. John Pete was mm-hmm. was program director for a while. I was program director for a while. Later, Tack Hammer mm-hmm. was program director. I was music director for part of that time, and not only did I work that midday shift, but also evenings in broadcasting and radio. You move around a little bit. I was at KQ for like 12 years, and that's kind of unusual to be at the same station for a long time.
Because in media years, that's like 100 years, right? Because every year it's like pet years. So if you're able to be
like dog years,
right,
you
exactly.
feel like a dog
right,
sometimes.
Right. But you you were telling me a story before we went on the air here about that fear even before you went on the air and the Johnny Winter concert. Could you just give me a brief little, because the story is too good not to tell on the air.
I don't know. It might be better if there were video, but a long time ago, there was a Johnny Winter concert in St. Paul at the Civic Center there. And his crowd was really different artists have different crowds or different types mm-hmm. of fans. And like a Judy Collins fan or Joni Mitchell group would not be the same as Johnny Winter, okay? Johnny played really raw Texas blues and stuff. It was hard-edged stuff. His crowd was a hard-edged group. And this was back in the day when you went to a concert, there was a lot of drinking, there was a lot of smoking of various substances. Everybody smoked.
Camel,
drank,
Marlboro,
whatever.
Right, yeah.
And other chemicals also were bouncing around. And his crowd was a tough crowd. Well, at 8 o'clock when the concert was supposed to start, Johnny wasn't there. At 8:30, we got a call that his plane had landed at the airport.
Oh, no.
And the crowd is, like, seething. They are in their own world. And it was my job as the MC to go out and assure everyone that the concert would go on as planned. Johnny's just running a little late.
Just a little more time for fun while waiting.
Yeah. Well, after like 45 minutes, time to go out again. When you stand on the lip of a stage and you have a microphone in your hand and you're trying to talk to 15 or 20,000 people, they're not individuals. It's like a large animal. The lights are blinding you from the stage lights.
I'm picturing this cloud of smoke also.
There's a cloud of smoke. It's all obscured.
Different colors of smoke is coming up from the crowd.
You can't see them, but you can feel them out there, and they're moving. And at that point, whiskey bottles started to sail through the air. So we're at me because I was the bearer of bad news. You know, he's on the way. It's a movie in the Blues Brothers where they're playing and have the chicken wire in front. I didn't have the chicken wire.
You survived to tell the tale. That's the best part about it.
Good enough, yeah.
And luckily we didn't come on late today, so we didn't have any of our studio audience were not throwing bottles.
And they would.
They would too.
They
might later. Oh, that's why we have security detail. We leave the building here at 2 o'clock. We have to make sure we have someone following us to our cars. We are a few days out from Christmas and even a few more days out from New Year's.
That guy with chicken wire is not security.
I hear you. But this is a story we've talked about before, but because we were on, I think, 4 a.m. last time we did the show, now we're on at 1 o'clock. 1968, New Year's Eve, you are a young guy. You're doing some fill-in radio work, and you went to the station out, what's called KQRS, okay? And everyone's going to go to a holiday party, and you're going to just spin some records that night. And you worked for, was it 2 days straight?
It seemed like it, no. They asked me if I would do a show, an evening show for them, because everyone at the staff was going to a New Year's Eve party. And I had worked there like a year before, like a summer internship kind of thing. So I knew the format and I knew the equipment. And they just needed me for one night. And so their staff could go to a New Year's Eve party. Well, I got there about 5 in the afternoon, because it would go on the air at 7. Along about 6 o'clock, it started to snow, and it kept snowing. The all-night announcer, George Fisher, was supposed to be in at midnight, but he was at the party, and it was snowing. And anyway, there was a blizzard. So I guess I was on the air straight until 9 in the morning, which was a long, long time.
That's
that was
a long
live
shift.
Radio.
That's a
there
long
was
shift.
No food, just radio station coffee, if you know what I'm talking about.
How many double albums did you play that night?
I don't know. The good thing about it is it was an album format.
Yeah, Revolution Number 9 got to probably play
so
three
So it could
times.
Really stretch out and do
say,
some neat mixes.
Did you play Pink Floyd's Animals, 15, 17-minute songs?
No, they weren't out. I don't think they had come out with that yet.
Ah, all right.
But it was a great, great night.
And they thought, this
and then
guy,
called me the next morning, the next afternoon. I had like 5 hours of sleep and said, gee, the other nighttime guy is sick. Can you come back tonight? But just for tonight, because we just have you part-time. Anyway, that turned into like a 12-year gig. I don't know what happened.
Nice. But, you took it while you could. Take advantage of every little opportunity there.
Radio is one of those things. It's hard work. It's weird hours, weird people. And a little bit of luck.
Why did Tom? Why did you look at me? you, as soon as he said "weird people," you look right in my eyes.
I'm always looking in your eyes. the format at the time was the format at that time rock? Was it a rock station when you filled in? Because you said you knew the format, but was the format established or was? Because what we've talked about before is this station was not a profitable station. This was a station owned by out of town owners that had these call letters, and they were just trying to keep it on the books as a tax write-off.
Yeah, yeah. It was really had a nice format during the day. Mm-hmm. They played what they called Starburst Clusters, which would be two or three songs in a row. And they did an interesting mix of album album music, really Streisand and the Supremes and Sinatra, and, you know, pretty nice mellow stuff mixed in with a little bit of light jazz. So you're Stan Getz and some bossa nova, and it was very well done. And in the evenings, then they loosened up, and we're starting to get into what was called underground radio. Later that became sanitized and was called progressive rock. But at that time, it was underground, and it was gritty. And George Fisher was the host of the all-night show there, and he was terrific.
And that format expanded to pretty much most of the station then, 24 hours a day.
Within 6 months or so of that, the whole format had changed to underground or progressive rock.
Our guest today is Alan Stone. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, really the birth of what happened was, because you take into context of where we were. I mean, it was AM radio. It was KDWB and WDGY, and they played what we could consider bubblegum rock. I mean, they played
Top 40. That
top
was their
40,
job.
The sure. Good. I mean, they played the fun Beatles songs. They played, you know, Sha-na-na. You guys are playing things that were, first of all, they're 14 minutes long and might have had a different...
We were playing the Allman Brothers and right. Bob Dylan and Janis Joplin and Johnny Winter and Pink Floyd.
Some songs which could have been called controversial.
Frequently.
Mm-hmm. And this caught on. And you were also doing something that others were not doing. You were promoting a FM band.
This was amazing. This was people today don't even know this, but up until the late 60s, early 70s, AM dominated everything. There was a huge business. A lot of companies made it by selling FM receivers and great big speakers. That's when big speakers started to come in, and people would buy a big amp, and they'd buy a great big set of speakers. And we were one of the first FM stations to really be out there doing something interesting. It was a confluence of what we were doing, and then the technology was switching from AM to FM. That was pretty cool.
And you embraced it. You really, at 92.5 or 92.5, you embraced it, and you put it right out there. Unlike, you know, 63 or, and I guess U100 eventually did the same thing, but you were really, that was what you were pushing clear, crisp signal.
Right, and it didn't hurt that we had an AM signal that we were simulcasting at the same time.
1440, that's which right. is, I think it's now Radio Disney, but we don't know that. This is KLEB. We don't discuss
okay.
other bands here. You you were now part of the full-time there. And you still had no budget for promotion, correct? Because we had a conversation about one of your first promos you did, and it was Take a Kite Down the Park. You want to tell that story?
We had a wonderful radio announcer, a young woman named Randy Kirschbaum, Killer Kirschbaum. I hired her when she was 17 and trained her. There was just something about her. You know, this is when you're a program director of a station, or a director of a film director, or an editor of a magazine or something like that, or any kind of a manager. Once in a while, you spot someone that has something special, and you say, you know, I can work with this person. There's something there. Randy was one of those people. And she wanted to do some promotions for us, and the management wouldn't give us a budget. Finally, they said $50. I mean, other stations are giving away cars. You know, they have billboards. We had nothing. Randy said, okay, we'll do something special in one of the Minneapolis parks. We'll have a kite fly in. Everyone, bring your own kite. And we'll call it, How High Can You Get? and we asked what people to bring their own kites and their radio. And their radio, and tune the radio to the station, and we'll make our own concert. So like 5,000 people show up with kites and radios, blanketing.
What park was it? Do you remember?
Yeah, Lake Nokomis. It was Lake Nokomis. It was the west side of Lake Nokomis. Well, there were starting to be traffic jams and problems. Management panicked, decided they had to do something. So they made an emergency call and ended up with a truckload of porta-potties that were delivered just in time.
What a great phone call that must have been. We need porta-potties now!
And we need them now. It was a very successful event. By the way, Randy, for those of you who might remember Randy Kirschbaum, she is still doing radio. She's working out of Portland, Maine, and we're programming a progressive rock station and a country station, and doing voiceovers on an album-oriented rock station.
And really one of the first female disc jockeys in
She and Susan Bradley were the first full-time rock DJs in town. Now, some of the other stations had women announcers who were doing recipes and school lunch menus and maybe some weather or something. But we had a couple of great women who were doing really good work doing rock and roll. That was unusual. That was unheard of. Everything we learned in radio was that people don't like to listen to women on the radio. But they loved ours, our women. It was great.
Well, because you were hiring women that were sounding like women. They weren't doing what the Sex Kitten voice, which is what I think that in the 70s a lot of stations around the country were hiring. They had that kind of that very raspy...
slow speech.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's because that's the way that, I guess, male station owners thought that women should be sounding like. So they did this real breathy kind of high, you know, and then they give them some sort of sexy name or something. And what I told Susan and Randy was, if you ever sound anything other than just like a natural woman, you're out of here. And they came on, and they just sounded natural. And surprisingly enough, the women listeners loved it because it wasn't phony. It was real. It was someone who was really an ordinary person. And the guys loved it, too. It was perfect.
So the station became more than just a tax write-off eventually. The station actually then made some money.
Yeah, we started making a lot of money. And
was that the best or worst thing that could have happened?
I think so. It was kind of funny because the station manager was perpetually surprised at our success, you know. And they didn't know what we were doing. There were no rules. We were, I think, the second most successful station of its type in the country at the time. And our competition was literally crumbling. It was a very difficult time for the top 40 stations back then.
Well, it was very rigid. They were doing was just the opposite, very rigid. And you were doing what WCCO AM radio had done for a generation, making it a community-oriented station. You were doing things that, you know, reaching out into different communities. You told me at one point you brought in the members of AIM into the studio and were doing programs with them.
Sure. We reached out. Again, this goes back to the day, and yet I don't want to drag this out too much, but it might be interesting to some people. There was a time when radio stations would have to give 30 seconds or 1 minute every hour of public service announcements. And most stations didn't like to do that because they could have sold a commercial or played music. The public service announcements that they did play tended to be like Save Our Ducks kind of national things, which is good, but they were national kind of public service announcements.
Very safe.
Very safe, pre-produced.
Non-controversial.
And what we did was said, let's take this as an opportunity. So all of our public service announcements will be local, and they'll be directed right at our audience, and we'll give them information that they can use.
And you had Clyde Bellacourt, you had those guys right there in the studio with you, and this is during the height of some of the conflicts they were having here in this the state and around the country.
That's true. We did give voice. I mean, there was an edge to some of our programming, and we did give radio exposure and voices to different people in the community that weren't ordinarily heard on radio.
Well, and this is still Minneapolis-St. Paul. This is a, you know, we're very especially at that time. We're that Norwegian coffee drinking very, you know, we don't want to cause a lot of problems. We don't want to get in your face and have confrontation.
We'll show up. We just won't say anything.
Right. And
how nice of you.
I know. Thank you.
You know, during the end of the Vietnam War, you know, you're one of the few stations in probably either, you know, especially in this market or in the country that was taking some stands, you know, through the music, through the entertainment that you were providing. And that was not something that our legacy stations were doing.
That's true. There was a very strong anti-war sentiment among a lot of people in this country. There were demonstrations in the street. They closed down the University of Minnesota. The governor called the National Guard out to patrol the University of Minnesota because students had erected a barricade across Washington Avenue and closed off traffic. I mean, this is rather serious demonstration of how people felt. And around the country, there was something that I thought was really negative, and that was when the soldiers were returning, oftentimes people would come out and they would boo them and they would jeer them and even spit on them.
They would blame the soldiers.
They would blame the soldiers. And again, I told the staff that we will not participate in anything like that. The soldiers are doing what they've been told. They are our brothers and sisters, and you know, they're members of our family. And what they did was because they were drafted, they were ordered to do this. So we better show some solidarity with them. Our argument is, anyone's argument is not with the soldiers. We took heat for that from some more radical segments of the community. You know?
Did you, and was management comfortable with what was going on? I mean, between the music and between the direction of what, and you weren't doing talk. I mean, right now, morning radio, a lot of it's talk and a little bit of music. You weren't doing that. You were still playing music, but the music was reflective of, and your demographic was young people. Was a college students. It was people that were maybe too young for that CCO, CCO stations style. So was management uncomfortable with the direction, or was the money coming in enough that, you know what, you're doing it. We're not comfortable, maybe. It's not our opinion, but go with it.
I don't know what they were thinking. And I've said that many times. I don't know what they were thinking.
Did you get drug in the office and said, yeah, you know, I'm not sure if you want to play that, or I'm not sure if this is what we need to be doing?
They didn't understand what we were doing. All they knew was that money was coming in. The station was very successful. And as long as we didn't have any profanity in the lyrics, they left us alone.
Just innuendo.
Once in a while, they pretended they didn't hear a couple of Rolling Stones songs or some other material, but generally we gave them what they needed to hear.
And you did become program director eventually, so you were music director and program director, and it was free form. You were not taking music off a playlist. You were listening to the music. You were previewing it, and you were essentially programming it personally. Correct?
Pretty much, yeah.
Which was a change in what the latter half of your career was.
Oh yeah, as time went on and the media is always changing. Those days lasted for 5, 6, 7, or 8 years, but then the rough edges get knocked off, and you are forced into playlists. Ownership changes. Different people come in to program a station. Pretty soon, the announcers are reading a card. They're told what to play, what order to play it in, and what to say.
Take a flashback. I have some audio here of our friend Alan Stone doing some morning radio here at KQRS.
That's Jethro Tull, the album Benefit, and this is KQ. The KQ Midnight Album Hour tonight is going to be featuring a nice album, City Boy, album called Young Men Gone West. That's tonight at midnight on KQ.
Royal Crest Waterbeds, the people who have helped so many Twin Cityans.
Ah, the waterbeds.
Oh, yes, yes.
Indeed. Sold a few of those. When you hear the audio, do you feel like you're just back in that studio doing the 9 a.m. shift?
Oh, man.
Do you miss it?
You know, radio stations, I've worked at a lot of them. There's a certain feeling to being in a studio that is just kind of natural. Even they're all different, but they're all the same. I see your engineer nodding his head. Yeah,
that's
true.
Right.
Somebody came up to me a couple of years ago when I was, and they said, "Oh, I remember when you were doing that morning radio show." And this is like 30 years ago, and I wanted to tell you something. It still messes with my mind. I was driving to work, and you said, "It's 8:15. If you're into time."
You're into that.
What? Is it 30 years later? He said, and still messes with me.
I just love the calmness. Like, it really struck me. I mean, was he able to go back to work, or did he pull off the road and then he went nuts? I mean, did he?
I don't know.
Is he sitting in a room right now just pulling his hair out because he still can't?
Oh, no. He was a professional wrestler. His name was Johnny Love. He was a great guy.
Oh, Johnny Love.
You know Johnny Love? Everybody
I've heard of
knows
Johnny Love.
Yeah. There's a gym that I go to once in a while.
You know, I'm into time. So let's take a break. We're going to come back. I got some more audio. I want to hear some more of these underground stories at the KQRS All Request Line and what went on. after hours. So we're going to come back with our friend Alan Stone on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here with Alan Stone of KQRS and also Cities 97.
Yes, yes.
And where else do you work here in this town?
Oh, KTCZ, which was a jazz station, and KTCJ, which was a jazz station.
So you like jazz also, or did you? No, is jazz your passion, rock and roll your hobby?
Oh, you know, you can't. Yeah. for somebody like me who's into music, you know, they're part of the package.
So you did KQRS. You left about 1980, mm-hmm. and I'm guessing that part of your departure was it just wasn't what it was originally. It was a very heavily formatted consulted station, and you were pretty much there just to announce records.
Yeah,
and you were looking for something maybe a little bit more than that. And that's when you went to couple of jazz stations in town, and actually Cities 97 was just a concept that was who's the couple that owned Cities 97?
Oh, the Parker family.
That's right. And you were one of their first on-air personalities there.
No, I wasn't. Let's see, Brian Turner, mm-hmm. and a couple other guys were there first. I think I came out about a year later.
But you did a show there for almost 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a pretty good career. Pretty good second spot there.
Yeah, I've left radio forever several times.
And look, you're back today.
Well, yeah, here I am today in a radio studio in Stillwater. By the way, Tom, I just wanted to just mention to anyone who has not checked out your website that it's a delightful website.
Well, thank you.
And here's the name and the address. I'm surprising you with this. I'm okay. Hijacking right. Your show here. It's tcmedianow.com.
Well, thank you.
And it is a beautifully produced, beautifully put together website with air checks, which is recordings, and video checks of virtually every broadcaster on TV or radio in the Twin Cities for the last 60 years or more. And you have clips of famous moments on all of the TV stations. So if anyone was raised in the Twin Cities or in Minnesota, they can go to TC Media Now, and there are extensive video clips going back to the 50s, all through the 60s. It's fun to see everyone dressed the way they used to dress back in the 70s,
right,
with the hair and all, yeah, like that. And I just wanted to thank you for the heroic effort you have gone to put all of this together.
Well, I appreciate that.
It's really, really an amazing archive.
Well, you know, and I can't do what I do without people like yourself who have been willing to talk to me and willing to take my phone calls and want to ask some bizarre questions or what went on and how these things happened. I like to know how things happen, and I'm not, for me, I can't take things at face value. I need to know why.
Well, you do what I'm doing to you. This is an ambush. you'll get together with folks like me, and we'll have a nice conversation, and it'll be wide-ranging, and we'll talk about the old days, and we'll talk about opinions. And then a few months later, you invite us onto your show, and there it is, and you ambush us. You cherry-pick the interesting stories that you think your audience would like to hear, and bang, there you go. And then you back it up with clips.
So see, anyway, a man with a plan.
It's a man with a plan. So what was your first acquisition? Do you remember when you started putting this together?
Well, this is an interesting turn of events here, but the thing that people online don't want to hear this as much as you, but I'll give you a little because you're my guest here. We had a VCR when they were very expensive, very large, and no one knew how to operate them. And I was one of the few people in the house that actually knew how to hit the record button and the play button. So I acquired a large collection of tapes before most people ever did. And then when I was in school, in high school, I would sift through video libraries and try to find clips and movies that I thought were bizarre and different. And,
sure.
And you find, not only do you find the content of what was on them, but you found the background, the commercials, the news, the history.
So people would record a movie from TV, but they'd let it keep running.
Because no one knew how to use their VCR.
Right.
And
so when the movie was over, there would be a newscast.
And to me, it's you know, we can't travel through time, but the best way that I found I can do it is if you go back, not only through photographs and through slides and films, but you take a tape and you take what was going on this day. A day of TV, we really can tell you a lot about what that day was. Now, whether it be from a, you know, from a news story that day or from the commercials that played. You know, we played earlier the Atari commercial. We played, you know, the Arthur Treacher's fish and chips. That's what the era was. That's what that year was. And while we can laugh about it now, that wasn't funny then. That was just like, oh, that's right. Well, I want to get some fish and chips and maybe some deep-fried chicken and top it off some Mountain Dew afterward and maybe some bacon and vodka. That's what... That's what was...
That was the world, the social reality we lived in.
We were talking about, before the show, when you were at KQRS in the old days, smoking. People smoked in the studio. People smoked in, you know, in the office, at concerts, throwing whiskey bottles. You know, that's what that was. And we see it now. We're shocked a little bit by we see this. I was pulling out some photographs. You know, we do these flash, you know, Throwback Thursday pictures on Facebook. And one of the jokes was, how many ashtrays can you see in pictures from childhood? You know, here's a Christmas tree and here's the toys. Oh, and there's an ashtray right there. It looks shocking and you know, you want to call child services or social services because there's all this stuff going on. But someone gave me a video once, transferred a DVD. And I popped it in and I'm transferring it. And a bunch of little kids. And the mom gives out 3 cans of pop to everyone. I thought, oh, my God, she's giving out pop to kids. And that was 30 years ago. So today, this I'm sure there's some laws against that now.
Oh, it's totally. It's just fascinating to see the changes. For instance, you know, they used to talk about the cigarettes. Mm-hmm. I was watching a clip of Tom Hanks talking about the new movie Saving Mr. Banks.
Mm-hmm.
And he said back in a lot of the pictures, Walt Disney, he was always pointing with 2 fingers at something. He had a cigarette in his fingers, but they airbrushed it out of all the pictures. And because they felt it wasn't Disney-centric to have that kind of thing. So in the film, he wanted to be realistic and portray Disney. But the moment you put a cigarette in somebody's fingers, it becomes a rated R movie. You cannot see it. So you will never see anything like that again on television.
One of our listeners, well, her name's Jan. She works at a local school. She has she had at one point a billboard in her elementary school office. It had a picture of Frosty the Snowman. And Frosty had a corncob pipe.
Uh-oh.
No, I'm not joking. There was a parent that called the school to complain that they were promoting smoking because Frosty had a pipe.
It's true. You know, almost every picture I can remember, he has that little pipe, and I never thought about it.
I have to ambush back here because I'm going to take back this interview. So,
how big is your archive at
yes.
this point? You must have
it's not huge.
It's not as big as the NSA archive. But
no.
You have transferred just about everything to digital.
It is not big enough, and that's why if you have some tapes or some audio or some cassettes, tcmedianow.com or tom@tcmedianow.com. You can follow us. Actually, you can even call here at KLBB, 651-275-1220. But after 2 o'clock, we're going to be gone.
I'll turn your show back to you now, Tom.
Back to KQRS. There's a lot of guys who, when I promoted this interview today, are very happy to hear you talk, and they're going to be very disappointed if we talk about me and my VCR for the next 20 minutes.
Well, you've done an awful lot for the community. It's really been a cultural journey you've been on.
Let's talk some culture. I want to hear 2 good stories from the request line or some antics in the studio. And I know you have many stories. Let's think of 1 or 2 we can talk about.
You're going to have to prompt me on this, I'm afraid.
I believe you had some stories that one of your evening DJs might have been restrained. We let someone in the studio.
You know, I've thought about this since I talked with you about it earlier. And I think this happened. I think the 70s happened, but I'm not sure. I think that this happened. George Fisher was our amazing all-night DJ. Incredible programming. And one night after a Sha Na Na concert, they came out to the station to do an interview after the concert. So they probably got to the station sometime after midnight. They did their interview, duct taped him to his chair, and left. He was alone in the studio.
What?
I see the engineer on the other side of the glass here going, what?
Duct tape him? Why?
Yeah. Well, they brought their own duct tape, I guess.
So then you come in the next day, and there's you know, that evening guy just duct taped to a chair, and
he apparently had done a lot of wriggling and got out.
So I guess, you know, when we bring in like the Sinatra impersonator or the, you know, Elvis impersonator, luckily no one yet has been tied up to a chair or you know, restrained when
we don't have the duct tape.
Yeah,
duct tape. See, we're lacking here.
Okay. So do you still again? That may be a good story. It may be apocryphal.
This is 2013 media. We don't really need facts to back up what we talk about here and there. We can just kind of go with it. You went to Studios 97, did 10 years, did a jazz show at Studios 97. You are currently now working in audiobooks. You've had a couple of great projects. One doing the Spinelli joke book, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, you've also done a great book on help me out here.
Well, you know, after all the years I spent in recording studios, I had no real skills for the regular world. So I decided, okay, studios are my thing, and started a little company that records and produces audiobooks, books on tape. And we've done some really, really interesting projects. One we did Kevin Kling's book, "The Dog Says How," with Kevin Kling, and that was really, really a lovely project. He's a genius. He's really fabulous. We also were asked if we would do a live recording of an Ole and Lena concert, which was a fundraiser for some folks up around Cambridge, Minnesota. And so the people who did Ole and Lena would perform for free, and we agreed that we would record and produce the recording for free. So it was recorded in a senior citizen bingo kind of community center cement blocks building with lots of tables and 8-foot ceilings and fluorescent lights. All these things are really bad for recording because the sound reflects off the walls and the ceilings, and there are problems in the recording quality, production values. We did that, and it was great. And we still give that away to people once in a while to show the kind of the quality of work we can do. The problem with a live recording is too many things can go wrong. A fire truck can go by, you know, or a train can go by, or someone in the back of the building can start a loud commercial dishwashing machine. You know, all of these were possibilities for that, and somehow we made it through. Probably the most exciting thing was that the lavalier microphone, the little clip-on microphone that people wear clipped on, the woman who was playing the role of Lena in the Ole and Lena stories, her lavalier slipped into the valley, and the sound was muffled for a while. Fortunately, we had a safety track. We had an overhead microphone, so we picked it up, and we were able to fix it in the mix. That's showbiz talk.
That's right. And what they say? Oh, we'll fix it in post, right?
Fix it in post.
See, that's a great project, and you're still doing active products right now, correct? And your company's called?
Oh, the company is called Holton House Audio.
And if someone wanted to contact you or look more into that company, they could go to
HoltonHouseAudio.com.
And now I'm actually going to do an ambush here again. Now, you, Alan Stone, now you actually have a different alias you go by occasionally, right? Now,
sure.
Is it allowed to say on the air? Are we at that point? Or?
Sure.
Okay, well, you know, Alan, he goes by Alan Stone by day.
Police know who I am anyway.
And Sheldon Danielson by night. And I think that you've gone by both here on the air, but I want to make sure that people are not confused. There's two people looking, you know, sounding and looking like you out there. But Alan Stone on air and Sheldon Danielson outside of this booth here. Do you still get people occasionally if you talk to them, like, didn't you used to be on KQRS, or didn't I used to hear your voice?
No.
Okay. Not even the guy who says, well, you know, are you into time? Someone's recognizing you.
He doesn't
there.
Remember much anymore.
That's right.
No, actually, once in a while, if I do a commercial or something,
okay.
I can do a radio voice. I'm trying very hard to be, like, normal here.
Yeah, because on the clips you play, you're very smooth and mellow and... You know, you sound a little bit like that, but it's different now from back then.
Yeah. If I'm doing a documentary, if I'm doing a narration, then I'll work the voice differently. I'll work a microphone a little bit differently. I may put my voice into a different thing instead of what I'm, you know, kind of trying to do now.
So you're actively doing voiceovers still. You're actively still in the business doing voiceovers, using that.
I'll do some, yeah.
I actually have some clips. Let's play another clip. This is from April 27th, 1978, just a few years ago.
The rhythm section on KQ, that's from a Champagne Jam album. And good morning. I'm Alan Stone. It's the 27th of April. It's Thursday. Looks like we just about made it through the end of another week. Gasp. And we've got great weather ahead with fair skies for today. And we're going to have good weather again tomorrow. High today is going to be moving into the low 70s. Saturday morning at 1 a.m., we're going to be featuring Jimi Hendrix on the KQ Classic Album Hour and the classic album Electric Ladyland. Jimi Hendrix, Electric Ladyland, Saturday morning at 1 a.m. on KQ. See, I want to hold your hand starting tomorrow exclusively at the Skyway Theater in Minneapolis and the Harmar in St. Paul. Just check your newspaper for theaters and show times. The DDB, the Daisy Dillman Band on KQ.
There we go. Great weather ahead, and gasp, the week is almost done.
I must have been almost done as well.
Oh, no, that's a very, very calm, you know, calm force there. The Harmar Theater, that's no longer with us, but Skyway Theater, I think that's still there. They just don't play nice movies there anymore.
I was a little disappointed when the Harmar Theater left.
Change happens.
Yeah. It's interesting listening to these old air checks because it's like looking at old photos, you know. We change, and we have a different perspective looking back.
You, looking back at that and the music that you selected and played that station, it's still playing there. It's, you know, 40 years later, they're still playing that music.
It was classic then, and it's classic now.
You found the best music, and it's the style that you set there, and it's changed, and there's some different personalities there. But, you know, really the style you set on, you know, the interaction between the hosts and the music, take the morning shows aside, it's still there. And the songs that were played in 1968 and 1978, it's still there. You went back there a second time, and this is a story that you're probably embarrassed to talk about, but because the statute of limitations is worn out, as you tell me.
No, but there's a variation on what you were talking about, and that was... I was given an opportunity to host a show that featured all that great stuff, you know, early Bonnie Raitt, Jackson Browne, Jimi Hendrix, and on and on and on. And it would have been a really soft and kind of cozy job, you know, just come in and host all this stuff and do album cuts. It would have been fun. And I thought about what it was like to live through finding that music. Because we would get 30 albums a week. We'd go through, we'd say, this song, this one. We didn't have playlists like that. We just had to really work hard. And I thought, you know, I'm not in it never been in it because it was easy. I'm not about to do a greatest hits life for me. You know, I needed a little challenge and a little edge.
And didn't the program director tell you, you don't have to play Def Leppard? Wasn't that the incentive to get you to do it?
Oh, yeah, that was another story. I'll tell you that one another time.
Okay, because you were still. I mean, you can minimize it, and but you were a very popular force in that station, and even years after, your name still circulated, and it still circulates today on the radio forums we have here.
I saw a circular with my name on it the other day.
That's right. It's still
out
there.
Is that a post office?
Yes. No, it's and I appreciate that Minnesota humbleness, but no, but you know, you really made a great mark on a very heritage station in this town. Not to be insulting by calling it heritage that you did, but it's a sound and a style that was emulated across the country, and really it's still part of, you know, the culture of this metro area. So for that, I think that a lot of people that are listening today who wanted to hear your voice and wanted to hear if the Alan Stone still existed, because Shell is still working, and he's out there, but Alan Stone, it's like when Johnny Fever went to become Riptide for a week on WKRP, and you couldn't blur between Riptide and Johnny Fever.
For those who remember WKRP, that never happened, but it could have.
A lot of things could have happened. Again, this is radio. We don't need to have facts to back up our tales. Hey, thank you again for another fantastic hour here at Flashback Twin Cities, and I think next time I'm going to have you just interview me, or I'll actually just bring in another guest here, and I'll just have you do the show.
We'll bring in some old KQ people, Benj McKay and George Fisher, maybe John Pete, some of those folks.
Let's do it. This is Flashback Twin Cities. Hey, everyone, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. We'll see you in a week. This is Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220.